Is the mic on?
Episode 65. What's wrong with Arnie Adams? I don't like these couples that work out together at the gym. I don't like this form of exhibitionism. And don't kid yourself. These couples think they're better than us, than the individual. They're there advertising. Look at us. Look at our healthy lifestyle. Look, we do everything together. I can't stand you. They're always attractive. They always have the latest the gym wear fashion. They're always in great shape. The ugly people know not to work out together, right? The unattractive, the overweight, the barely in shape people like me. I know not to bring somebody to the gym. It's like they like parade each other around. There's always like the man's parading the woman or the woman's parading the man. It's pathetic. I don't like it. I don't like it. I want it to stop. No couples should ever work out together in the gym. It should just be, it's known. I just don't like, they look down on people like me. I don't like that. You know what I like? Bringing this up. I like when all of a sudden one of the couples, one in the pair, starts showing up alone. All of a sudden the other person's gone. You know, like the dude now the dude wants to be friends with me. I don't think so, buddy. You had your chance. What's his name, Kev? Arnie. Yeah. Listen, if you're going to show off, if you're going to flaunt, if you're going to flaunt your relationship, then I don't care when you break up. I celebrate it. It's like these people on social media that used to put it out there. Oh, look at me. Look at all the new relationship photos. Look how happy I am. If you put your happiness in my face when it goes away, I'm celebrating. Your lack of happiness is now my happiness. Part of your happiness pile has just gone into my happiness pile. We have a lot to talk about. I was in New Orleans last week for my birthday. Also, the love letter from episode 64 with that girl from high school that I was corresponding with. You're not going to believe it. There's breaking news. There's actually breaking love letter news that I have to update you on. First of all, thank you to all my listeners. I can't thank you enough. I'll tell you why. Now that I'm doing other people's podcasts, I can't believe all the love I get under my videos. And I can't believe how much hate other people get. It's crazy. You know, I did Whitney Cummings' podcast. I can't believe the vitriol. I can't believe the hate. I don't... Same with, like, even the Bobby Lee clips. It's like there's some bizarre comments, that's for sure. So I first want to say, everybody that's watching More Than Loud, my special on YouTube, which is creeping awfully close to 1 million views, and that will be a day of celebration for me. I want to thank everyone that's watching it and leaving nice comments and sharing it with people, and that all helps the algorithm. If you like a video and you share a video, then it just encourages YouTube and their stupid algorithm to like me more. If you want to keep in touch with me, the email is laugh@arnieadams.com. Shit. Delete that. The email, well, you can email me there if you want, but the email for the podcast is whatswrong@arnieadams.com. whatswrong@arnieadams.com. And there's a general email box or just a general portal, teamwhatswrong.com. Sorry, I lost my thought again. But thank you for being really unbelievable. The number of people that just support me, it just blows my mind. It really does. The people that are subscribing to Patreon. Some people just started sending me money. I was talking about that last night in the green room at the Comedy Store. I'll get into that show later. And I said, you know, it'd be nice if some of you people in the green room, you know, Tiffany Haddish is there. I said, why don't you guys start just Venmoing me money? And so Sam Tripoli, who I was on his podcast recently and has become a great supporter and friend, said, I'm going to send you $20 tomorrow. And he did. He sent me. I said, you send me $20. I'm sending $30 back to you. So he, of course, he sent me $20 and I sent him $30 back. And so I lost 10 bucks. But I just wanted to show him, because you match kindness with more kindness. You match kindness with more kindness. In fact, you exceed. You match kindness with exceeding their kindness. Okay, I am back. I am getting back in the groove finally, and I'm going to start doing more stand-up comedy on the road. So I have tour dates coming up, which includes I'm going to do the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley, California, December, I think it's 3rd. It's a Saturday night. I am then going to Brea, California. I am then doing New Year's Eve at Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club in Las Vegas. And then my 2023 dates include Chicago. I'll be in Seattle, Washington. Bren Burton, Washington. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I think it's a little island. I'll be back at McCurdy's in Sarasota. I'll be in Chicago at the Comedy Improv Comedy Club. Oh, by the way, we lost Bud Freeman. I'll talk about that. I'll be in Atlanta and Florida. Anyway, all those dates will eventually be up on OrnieAdams.com. I just, after COVID, I lost all my drive to like update my site to go on the road. You know, I'm just sort of getting back into feeling like myself again. And I enjoy this, just being home. This isn't my home. This is my trailer, Big Yellow, but my home is over there, and I enjoy it. I enjoy just sitting there thinking, wow, I worked hard and I deserve to sit here and look at the nature and hear silence. Today's a quiet day, doing this in the afternoon, a rare afternoon podcast. But I am going to go back on the road, and I plan to shoot another special. I'm just trying to find a home for it. Where can my next special go? Or do I put it up on YouTube? That's the thing. If More Than Loud on YouTube hits a million, then I'm going to upload Takes the Third, which somebody else has already done, and that's over 900,000. So they're neck and neck, but I'll upload it on my page. And then I plan to shoot another special. And, you know, if I have to pay for it myself and put it up on YouTube, that might be what I plan to do. But I'm meeting with companies and, of course, streaming services. I'd love to talk to them too. And I think probably my reps are. But it feels like the hour was ready to go last year. It was ready to go in 2019 or 2018. And now I hope there isn't atrophy. I hope my enthusiasm for some of those bits isn't waning. That's what I really hope. So my tour dates will be up. I encourage you to see it. If you haven't seen me live, if you've just watched More Than Loud, I got to tell you something. Every single night, including at the Comedy Store last night, it's different. It's different. Something happens that won't be caught on tape that night of the taping. In fact, I'm thinking of calling my special. You should have been. You had to be there. Because you know when people tell a story and then the story doesn't translate and they say, well, you had to be there as a save. Like, there's a whole long story, doesn't pay off. And they go, yeah, well, you had to be there. Well, that's what I'm thinking of naming my special, because comedy does not translate on tape like it does that night in the showroom, including last night. So last night, I went on the end of the show. I was at the Comedy Store. Brendan Schaub was there, who I'm now connecting with and would like to have him on this podcast or be on his podcast. Then Eliza was on. Again, I've invited her, and I invited her today to come on. Tiffany Haddish, again, open invitation. And then Tony Rock. Good friend, my buddy Tony Rock from the New York days, from Comic Strip. It was good to see. You know, Tony and I saw him sitting in the back of the Comedy Store, and I just, you know, I gave him like three fist bumps. Like, yeah, dude, good to see you again. And it's fun to, like, nothing more needed to be said than just that moment. And I went on after Tony. I closed the show, and, you know, that's a hell of a lineup I had to follow. So, and then we took a group picture. They go, let's take a group. Finally, I'm in a group picture with some cool comedians, and it's blurry. Whoever took it was blurry. So, I want to talk about, and I wasn't planning on talking about this, but I should pay tribute to Bud Freeman, because what Bud did for the stand-up comedy community is unbelievable. There weren't really comedy clubs back in the 70s. Like, you'll hear Jay Leno, and I don't know what happened to him. His face caught on fire. What a week. Like, Bud died. I had another friend that died named Brian, my friend Brian really helped me for a while promoting my shows and helped fill up the audience for that special More Than Loud. So rest in peace. And Bud, rest in peace. And Jay's face, rest in peace. I found myself really upset when I heard the news that something happened to Jay Leno, because Jay has been so supportive and so nice to me. And when I was on The Tonight Show, I remember he called me the night before my first appearance and he said, listen, you know, and he's the reason I was on it. I was with an agency. They tried to get me on the Tonight Show. My manager tried to get me on the Tonight Show. They couldn't get me. Nobody could get me on. So I'll tell the story someday. I got the tape to Jay back in the day when there were tapes. And Jay called me and said, I'm putting you on the show this Friday. And then Jay called me Thursday before the show. And he said, are you ready? And I said, yeah. And he goes, don't change anything. You're going to wake up in the morning and you're going to think, I should change something. Here's a funny line. Don't change anything. Just do it. Which was great advice. And he said, what are you concerned about? I said, I'm concerned because when I tape it, sometimes it's 4.5 minutes, sometimes it's 6.5 minutes. And I'm told I can only do 4.5 minutes. And I'm afraid, like, what if the audience is responding? Because on these TV sets, they tend to really respond. I said, what if they're responding so much? He said, what should I do? Should I cut a joke? And he said, if you're killing and you go over, all sins are forgotten. And so he gave me the blessing. And I remember when I did that Tonight Show appearance, I went over and I saw them sort of going like this to me and Jay waved them off, said, no, 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 no. Let the kid go. Let him go. Just want to make sure that camera's recording. It is. Okay. So Jay, I hope a speedy recovery. My parents came to one of my tapings, the first taping of the Tonight Show, and Jay couldn't have been cooler. It was hanging out in the green room. And my father and Jay are both from Andover, Lawrence, Massachusetts. So they were talking about the local stuff and really hit it off. And my parents loved Jay. And they said, you need to contact Jay and see if, wish him well. And I said, I don't know if he wants to hear from me. I don't know. You know, all I have is his text. Am I going to text his phone? I mean, he's in a burn recovery. He's in some sort of like silo where his hands are up and he's healing with oxygen or something, pure air. Again, I only know what I've read, mostly on TMZ. But Jay, get better. And you've been truly, truly a friend and someone who's supportive. And again, I'll tell all these stories. I'd love to tell them when somebody else is here so I have somebody to bounce off of. But when my last special, More Than Loud, came out, Jay called me several times. Just couldn't have been... and again, more supportive, more complimentative or compliment. Yeah, you know, he said nice things. Why am I even trying? So get better. But we also lost Bud Friedman. And so if you listen to like Jay Leno in the early comics from the 70s, they were working strip clubs. They were creating places to do comedy like the Ding Ho in Boston, a Chinese restaurant. And when I came in, there were independent comedy clubs, Nick's Comedy Club. There was McCarty's in Sarasota. There was the one in Detroit. There's Hilarities in Cleveland. All who was owned by Nick, they're all owned by individuals that loved comedy. And Bud loved comedy. Till his death, he went to watch comedy. He died at 90 or 91. I performed at his 90th birthday at the Improv with Jay Leno. He handpicked me to perform. That's how supportive Bud Friedman was of my comedy. And he loved comedy. He truly, and there are so many people that are in the business now don't love comedy. You know what they love? Dollar signs. Dollar signs. It's all they look for. Who can fill seats? Not what's the best show. Dollar signs. But the pioneers, the Bud Friedmans, the Les McCurdy's, the Hilarities, these guys, of course they loved money. But they loved comedy and they watched every show. And I saw Bud after his 90th birthday was at least two other of my shows. 90 years old and he's still going to comedy. He was watching more shows this year at 90 than most people that own comedy clubs or book comedy clubs go to. It's amazing. So thank you, Bud Friedman. The funeral is tomorrow. Friday, I've been invited. I don't know if I'm going to go. Funerals, you know, they're sad, but also I see nothing but love. Nothing but love at the funerals. And Bud, nothing but love for you. And I remember one time I misunderstood him He brought me up on stage. He used to do this thing where if he really liked a comic and he was at the club, he would bring them up on stage. So I was closing a show one night and he said, I want to bring you up on stage. And he said, this guy had a meteoric rise. And I thought he said mediocre rise. So then I started ripping into him. I still feel bad about that. I had a chance to apologize. He didn't even remember. But, you know, Bud, thank you for everything, for creating all these improv comedy clubs all over the country. If I didn't mention it, Bud Friedman is the founder of the improv comedy clubs. And rest in peace. Rest in peace. Bud proving there are good people in the comedy clubs. That's not what I thought I was going to talk about today. I thought I was going to talk about the love letter. New Orleans. I should talk about the love letter first while I have energy. Then I'll get into New Orleans. Then I'll get into this. 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 Oh, before I do anything, here are a couple pictures left over from episode 64 where I went home. I'm going home next week for Thanksgiving. I'm going to get more love letters and more pictures. But here I'm holding up to the camera picture of me and Dane Cook at Nick's Comedy Club in Saugus, right across the street from, again, another great independent comedy club, Mike Clark, Lenny Clark's brother in Boston, always supportive of me early on. Couldn't be nicer. I'd love to come back and work that. One more time, Mike. Let's do it. Let's one more time. Nick's Comedy Club, across the street from Giggles. Mike Clark owned Giggles Comedy Club, Route 1, Saugus. And this is Dane and I. Look at Dane. Look at him. I think I have a picture where we both have goatees. Maybe I do have a goatee in this picture. But that's us back in maybe the 90s. Young Dane Cook and Orny Adams. This is my first manager. I want to say his name was Dan. Dan, maybe his last name was Marino. Big guy, signing a headshot for him. That's my first manager from Boston. I've got a lot of pictures I want and stories I want to share with you about everything. But Dane Cook and I used to work in Boston and hang out. And when I moved to New York City, he was in the U-Haul with me. And now I see Dane out here. And Dane has done very, 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 very well, for sure. Big sip there. Big sip and big yellow. Here we go. Here is the love letter. I don't want to hold it up, but look at it. It's on like this old manila paper, but I'm flashing it fast. Here's the actual love letter that I read on the last episode where I wrote to this girl in high school. You used to pass notes back and forth in class. So I wrote him part of the note. You pass it. Pass it, goes to a couple of people. This is before texting. And then she would write on it and pass it back. And you do this until the teacher caught the note and then sometimes read it in front of the class. So I wrote to this woman, girl. Should I say her name? I said, I was going to call you last night to see what I missed in mathematics, but I didn't because I thought you would think it was for social reasons and go tell everyone and rumors would be flying. I've always been very private. To this day, I'm very private. When I'm dating somebody, I don't like it to leak. I don't like to share it with anybody. So the one thing I noticed in these notes back and forth was that my personality has not changed at all. I am exactly what I was like back then. So I read this letter back and forth because I thought it was so funny. And I thought it really showed who I was as a young person and how I've sort of basically, you know, the trunk was there, the roots were there. And now the tree just keeps growing and it's all just an extension of the same sort of basic personality. Like we are who we are. That's what I'm saying. Like if you are, whatever you are, accept it. Like I've never been able to lose weight. I've never had a ripped, doesn't matter. Like today I said, I'm dieting. I'm up on the scale. Maybe I ate too much in New Orleans, although I don't think so. I'm dieting. Okay, I go to the gym. I don't eat as much as I normally do. I thought I was going to pass out. Like, I just can't physically get... So get used to this. Whatever I look like, get used to it. So my personality's sort of been the same. Physically, I've been the same. Like, we are... I have the same insecurities. I've always felt like an outsider. I'm still an outsider. Like, last night at the comedy club, I was shocked that I was in a group picture. I'm shocked when people want me on their podcast. I'm shocked. Nothing's changed. So listen to this. Here's where the story gets interesting. I'm talking about the love letter from high school. here's where it gets interesting. I posted a video from episode 64 on Facebook. And it was, I said, the name of the title in the video was She Called It in High School Love Letters. Because at the end of the letter here, I think she basically said, where is it? Her handwriting's so much better than mine. It's embarrassing to even, where is what she said? She told me I should have called. I would have kept the letter a secret. And then she said something. I've got to put my glasses on because her writing is much more faint than mine. I'm sorry to do this to you and have you guys on hold here. Oh, yeah. She said, you should have called. I mean, I would have kept it our little secret. And then she said, your loss, parentheses, just joking, your loss. And so I thought she's right because she's now married, has kids. And look at me. I'm in a trailer in the backyard doing a podcast. So she was right. I love when you're younger and you break up with somebody and you say, have a good life. Good luck. Good luck recovering from this in fifth grade. In high school or college, you break up. I break up with a woman and go, good luck. Like she's not going to recover. Years to recover from me. Of course they're going to recover. But people do. So that's, I think it's funny when people are, your loss, you know, as if, you know, you're not going to get over your loss. Best of luck to you. Good luck getting over this. We're in junior high. You're never going to meet anybody better than this. You don't even know who you are in junior high. So I posted this on Facebook. She called it in high school love letters. That's the name. And I put up a video reading the love letter because I thought, you know, I don't really reveal as much of myself in my stand-up as I could. I find it hard to weave in sentimental stuff. So I do it on the podcast. So I'm going to read love letters. So you see, I'm not the big beast. I'm not this big, horrible, yelling person that you think I am on stage. Have a nice life. That's another one. So I posted, and under the video, she comments, the author, the second author, the recipient of the said love letter, which I'm not even too sure is a love letter. It was like a friendship, probably with some flirting on my end. She clearly had no interest. I told her, she told me to have a nice life, and then she moved on. She moved on, got married, and had kids. She showed me. By the way, everybody I've said have a nice life to has done better than me. So under it, she writes, under the post, under the video from episode 64, where I read the love letter, she wrote, so now, of course, I'm wondering, who was the recipient of your mathematics non-rumor including note? She didn't know it was her. I think she knew. I think deep down inside, she understood it was her cadence. She sniffed her DNA on that note, even though I didn't reveal who it was. I'm still not going to reveal. I wrote in response to her comment, it was you. It was you. And then I put a screenshot of part of the note, and I said, please verify. And then she wrote back, well, this is awkward with a couple of emojis. I don't speak emoji, so I don't know what those mean. And then she wrote, I was just joking when I posted before. I had no idea it was actually me, exclamation, exclamation. So now I go, I'm taking this. No. She reached out to me on Messenger. And I had missed one of her messages from like 2019 when I was touring and I was playing in Boston. I was at the Wilbur Theater, and she had sent a really nice message that she was coming to the show and that she had seen my special and loved it, and I didn't respond. I'm such an idiot. But you tell me, have a nice life. I'm not responding to you 25 years later. Meanwhile, no update on Frank Dettori. Did you see that when I talked about that on Whitney Cummings' podcast? Trying to find the kid from high school that didn't invite me to the party? Still trying to track him down. Show him how well I've done. So this is a direct message. This is a direct, I feel funny reading this. But this is a DM on Facebook from the recipient, from the other person in the love letter. She wrote, "I just wanted to reach out with much belated apology. I am so sorry for being rude to you in the notes, or otherwise, when we were in high school together. That was obnoxious, and I am completely mortified and very sorry. You definitely have had the last laugh, pun intended. I really enjoy your comedy and love watching you. Keep it up, exclamation. So happy for your continued success." Now, I wasn't offended by her letters at all. Okay, so now I've got to repair this. Now, me amping it up on the podcast has caused concern for her. So immediately I write back, "What are you apologizing for? You were never rude," all caps. "I only have fond memories of our friendship. I'm sorry if it didn't come forward in the clip. I amp everything up. Please do not give this another thought. Do not give this another thought. I bet I have more of our letters going back and forth. How are things with you?" Yeah, when I go back to Boston, I'm going through those boxes. I'm going to find all the... I keep a lot of things. This is why. How great is this? I'm now reliving high school. And then I wrote, "I think we had fun, genuine banter. You were certainly never mean-spirited at all." She wrote back, "Phew. I'm glad you took my words as they were intended." See, this is what's going on now. Like, why would she even think to apologize? You don't have to apologize. Like, everyone's apologizing for everything. Even if you were mean, it was back in high school. And guess what? People are mean in high school because we're still trying to figure out who we are. We have hormones. We have insecurities. Like, I don't mind. The people that were mean to me in high school, it's made me stronger. And then other times people are mean to me and it makes me reform my behavior. I've talked about this in the past. I've done projects where it's revealed a part of myself and I've been attacked and it's made me a better person. It's made me more aware of myself. Sometimes criticism, sometimes people being mean, sometimes even forms of bullying, it serves a purpose. I know that's controversial. And I know on stage I like to say, I'm pro-bullying. And I do it sort of for shock. But in a sense, I am. You know, I'd still be picking my nose if we didn't, like, mock people for picking their noses. Let me continue with this letter. Let me put some glasses on so I can read it better. So she wrote, phew. "I'm glad you didn't take my words as they were intended. Definitely banter, mixed with a degree of teenage snottiness. I thought the clip was really funny. Until, of course, I found out I was the author of the note. I still find it funny, mixed with a little bit embarrassing. I have the same memory, fun banter. We were clearly witty, charming teenagers. Nothing like the teenage hooligans of today. I should know I have three of them and an 11-year-old. She has four kids. All is well here, living in the Boston area with family. Four kids, one husband, one dog, one fish. She's still funny. She's still funny. Domestic suburban bliss. I highly recommend it. How are you doing living in LA? I'm loving What's Wrong with Orny Adams. When are you coming to Boston again? I'm fascinated that people in my high school listen to this. I wrote back, What I find most fascinating about all these notes I found, my personality hasn't really changed that much. The writing was on the wall. Please don't be embarrassed at all. The notes are entertaining. I can't wait to go home for Thanksgiving and find more. The more likely case is I was rude to you at some point. Do I need to apologize? Now I got to match her apology with an apology. Of course I was rude. I was an obnoxious kid. To ask anybody. I just remember having a fun friendship with you, and I can see why you're witty. Case in point, when you said, and one husband. Hope, how do you do it with four kids? I don't know how people with four kids do. I can barely do it alone. Well, you know, because you listen to the podcast. I think that is amazing. And I just assume no one listens to the podcast, so I think it's amazing that you do. I am so grateful you do and curious what you connect with. Now I'm fishing for compliments. I hope you will grant me permission to continue this note passing segment on the next one, episode 65. I would never reveal your name, but I think it is fascinating that we are talking about it here. If you're comfortable, I would love to talk about the DMs. Just let me know. I never want people to feel uncomfortable. I don't want anybody to feel like you can't DM me or any correspondence or phone conversations. I'll keep it private if you ask me to keep it private. Here's where it gets great. My mom called a few days ago. She's gripped by you commenting under my post and you turning out to be the author of the note. My mom, listen to this. My mom calls and she says, do you see who commented under your post on Facebook? I go, yeah, I commented back. She goes, yeah. She goes, don't you think that's funny? Amazing? I said, yeah, I do. Now, I'm uncomfortable that my mom is following me on social media and commenting. So then my mom said, how well do you know this? I'm going to say her name. I said, of course I know her. I went to high school with her. Well, have you been to her page? I don't know. Now my mom went to her page. She's like, you know, she has four kids, married, a fish. You know, she went to an Ivy League school. She's done. My mom is researching my mom knows more about me now than when I lived at home in high school under their roof. My mom knows more about me in high school now than when I was in high school. My mom is so bored, has so little of a life that she like, I used to take pictures with people after shows and she'd say, interesting person you took a picture of. I go, what do you mean? She goes, well, did you look at her profile? And, you know, she doesn't approve of this woman for whatever reason. And I said, no, I didn't. I don't know these people. They're just strangers, which is a moment in time. My mom spends time. Okay, you know what? I'm fine with it. Mom, have fun. Have fun. You know why? Because I haven't given you grandkids, so I'm not filling your time like your grandkids are. So here are my grandkids is my illustrious life. Enjoy it. My mom, I've tried to talk about this on stage. They know more about me now. They know, like in college, I went on a cruise. I snuck away on spring break. I think I said I was going to be in Florida, but I was dating a girl whose father was the president and CEO of Cunard Cruise Line. So we went on, not the QE2, but like another big boat. And I didn't want to tell my parents because I'd be nervous. I also didn't want them to know I was dating this girl. I'm private. Ask the girl in the love letters. I like to keep everything discreet. So my mom somehow found out and calls it. How was the cruise? She claims that I left a note about it or the cruise ticket under a rug. But she knew during that time. She knew when I came back that I'd been in Florida, that I'd been on this cruise. Remember, we had to come back to Florida. We had to drive to Miami, get on the cruise. And somehow when I came back, there were no phones. So I had to sort of plan it in a way like, hey, I'm going to be in an area where we can't talk for a few days. But they figured it out. They're detectives, my parents. And they love these little breadcrumbs on social media that I leave. And they'll listen to this podcast. And they'll comment on that. You know. She'll tell me which, she liked the clip of me and Whitney. And then if she doesn't like it, she'll comment on, oh, your hair look good. Or she doesn't like my hair. Then she just ignores it. Like that clip I did when I was home a few weeks ago about how my mom thinks I can't hear like my dad. She'll like repeat things if I don't respond fast enough. Like she's like, we're going to have dinner at 6:00. And I don't respond. I hear it, but I don't feel like I need to respond. And then she'll lean in. She'll go, dinner at 6:00. I'm like, I know, Mom, I can hear you. You don't have to say it louder. I'm not like Dad. And so I did a clip of that. And I don't know. She wasn't blown away by that. where was I? This is, again, corresponding with the woman in the love letter. She said, I agree with your assessment of your personality, at least from what I have seen in your comedy. You've always had a fantastic sense of humor and irreverence, and as well as clever timing. You're an astute observer, and I think you always have been. I definitely enjoyed our friendship and banter, both in person and in our written correspondence! Exclamation. Feel free to share the notes. Thank you for asking permission. Totally unnecessary. I disagree, but I feel like you have to respect people and honor their wishes if they didn't want their private correspondence here. You didn't identify in the clip. I was a moron who outed myself. Brilliant. Brilliant. It's horrifying or cringy, as my kids would say, to think about what we said or wrote back then. Kind of like looking at an 80s picture of ourselves and sky-high Aquanet stiffened bangs. Remember women used to wear their hair long in the parachute pants? I love parachute pants. Those are the tight pants with all these zippers. She said it was the Michael Jackson style, but I don't think it was Michael Jackson that inspired it. There were all these zippers, and there was this one girl, I can't remember her name, but when she wore those parachute pants, did something for me. Oh, I wonder who that was. Who was that girl? She was Italian. Oof. All right, let's get back to the letter. Glad to have entertained your mom. I'm impressed that she's on Facebook. We recently had to get my mom a new phone. She'd hear my stories about getting my parents' phones. You have no idea how difficult it is to get a phone for someone who loathes, fears any kind of technology. My parents love technology, and it's a horrible experience updating them. She's still intimidated by the microwave, the same microwave that has been in our kitchen since about 1984. It's the size of a filing cabinet and has push buttons. We were finally able to find a flip phone that she can, she still can't use. So they got a flip phone. She still can't use that technology. So she said, I'm impressed. Your mom must be one of those cool moms, grandmas. Well, she sure is. She sure is. And she's going to be happy that you said that. Sorry for the long-winded reply. She said, to answer your question about what resonates with me about your comedy is lots. The irreverence, the lens you put on the absurdity of everyday, the disconnect between people and their expectations, entitlements, and realities, and basically the fact that you're just really, really funny. Thank you. I almost said your name, but thank you. I appreciate hearing that from someone in my childhood, or not childhood, but high school years. You're so very good at what you do, really. It's just so much fun to watch. So I said, I responded, it's very interesting about my personality and love your insights into my comedy. Please send a pic of the microwave. And I said, my mom can navigate Facebook better than me, which is true. She's already done a deep dive on you and knows you went to, and I say, her school. I always ask for permission because I want people to feel comfortable interacting with me. And I was in New Orleans. Anyway, so that's the conclusion of the love. I mean, isn't it just fascinating that in this day and age, you can just connect with people? Like 50 years ago, maybe when I'm home for Thanksgiving, I would run into her and we could connect and have a conversation. So things have just, it's changed. I don't know if it's for the better. In this case, it's for the better. But a lot of people you never need to hear from again. And, you know, it's weird. I'm very aware. I'm very aware that my parents and family, now my niece and her college friends, all follow me on social media and comment. You know, I understand I'm a semi-public person, semi-known, and that I invite people to, but I just wish it was segregated, that they didn't have access. I would certainly feel a sense of freedom that I don't feel. I feel inhibited. I feel less likely to go off the rails knowing that I have family that listens to me and friends. And I'm always cognizant that, you know, if I date somebody, their family might listen to this and judge me. That's why I tell everybody, don't put your whole life out there. Don't talk about all your sexual experiences and all that stuff, because, you know, people that you might date in the future will hear that, or their families, and maybe it won't be well received. But that's me. I'm just, I'm a, I'm a prude. You can tell I've always been a prude by those love letters. I think this is interesting. Under all my comedy clips, I get compared to two people. The first I'll talk about, and I'm talking about appearance. Well, sometimes it's some guy from The Incredibles, some animated guy with big red hair. But I have been compared. This is something new in 2022. And I think it has to do with the fact that something happened to my face as I've gotten older. My face changed. I don't like it. I was just getting used to my old face, and now it changed. I was just starting to accept my old face that I didn't accept my whole life. And now all of a sudden, it's changing. Like my bone structure. Why can't anything just... Why does the body do this to us? So now, and I'm under the video, they go, this, what is this? This guy looks like Elon Musk. I'm like, I don't look like Elon Musk at all. And then I saw this picture on the internet. It appeared on TMZ of Elon Musk. And when I went and I saw it, I thought it was me. I thought I was on TMZ. I thought, what am I on TMZ for? Did I die? What did I do to get on TMZ? This is Elon Musk, and I have to admit, for a second, I thought it was me. I mean, he looks like me. And then I found another picture. Oh, with him with a microphone, he looks like a hacky comedian. Not that I ever look like a hacky comedian, but he did. Then people compare me to Christopher Walken. I don't know why people can't just say, hey, that guy's funny. He looks like himself. It's hard enough in life with your face changing all the time. Couples at work out of the gym, we did that. How much I love my fans because they leave nice, very few negative comments under my videos. Me and Elon Musk, I did my tour dates. Again, there will be a major announcement in the next few days. I will be part of a big production in Las Vegas in December. I don't want to say what it is until the deal is signed, until maybe I have some of their money in my pocket. But I will definitely be in Vegas New Year's Eve at Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club. I'm excited to return. We're gonna have fun. Listen, I don't need to work. I don't need to work. So if I'm going to work New Year's Eve, it's because I will enjoy it. I know I will enjoy the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club. I'm doing shows Thursday the 29th, Friday the 30th, two shows, and then two shows on New Year's Eve 2023. So ring in the new, if you're in the Vegas area, you want to come see these shows. It's going to be great. And I may be in Vegas earlier in the month. I will be at the Throckmorton Theater in Mill Valley, California. And then I'll be in Brea, California at the Improv. Brea, California at the Improv mid-December. Mid-December. You got to get tickets now. It's going to be a good year. It's going to be a good year. And I have a lot to say. And if you listen to this podcast or you've seen clips online, come see the long form. Come see. You're going to see something. If you're at the show Friday night, you come back Saturday night, things, it's just different. It's a living format that's malleable. It's changing continuously. And I don't know where my head's going to go and where the audience is going to, it will take me. So, oh God, I got to talk about New Orleans. That was interesting for sure. I'll tell you one thing I don't like. But first of all, I don't like a lot of things, but there was a baby in first class. Why is there a baby in first class? And then the plane took longer to load because the parents were like holding the kid up like it's a trophy. So everyone's going, oh my God, look at the cute baby. Look how cute the baby. I got to be honest with you. Baby was not that cute. Can you say that? This was an average looking baby. Like when this kid grows up, I don't know if it was a boy or a girl, whatever. I don't know if it was fluid. The kid's going to work out alone. This is not a good looking baby. And then I look at the kid, I go, that's an average kid. Why are people gushing over the average? I looked at the parents, I go, yeah, average parents. But everyone thinks everybody fawns over these kids. And I look around, I go, you know what? That kid's going to turn into that over there. I hate 98% of the people on the plane. I don't like them. Okay? They were once kids, little babies. Then they grow up and they're assholes, serial killers, commit crimes, not nice, not gracious, not courteous, not polite, don't hold doors for people. But they went, look at the little, they were once a little baby in first class. So now everybody has to stop and gush at the baby. Hey, I'm two rows back going, put the baby down so we can load the flight. All right, let's get the boarding done. Then you can show off your little baby. This worshiping of kids. I mean, haven't we figured it out? It's not that hard to make them. They're all over the place. We're creeping up at 8 billion people. What's with all the gushing? Same with the dogs. I'm going to say something controversial. I don't love all dogs. A lot of dogs I don't like. A lot of dogs look like they're going to bite me. I don't like it. I don't like when they jump up on me, put their paws on me, and the owners do nothing. Like they barely try to get the person down, the dog down. They go, he's friendly. Yeah, it doesn't appear friendly to me. You know what's friendly? Not the paws on the chest. That's friendly. Then they say, oh, we're working on this with the train. Well, why don't you finish working on it with the trainer? Then have the dog not, kept in the other room or tied down or something. I don't want to be part of the training. Well, I guess the dog hasn't passed the test yet. Back to training. So I don't love all dogs. A lot of dogs are cute, but I also don't like people that put their entire lives into the dog. That their whole stock, the whole essence, every picture they have, the stupid dog's in the picture. Like they have no life without the dog. Like the dog is part of their identity. Like a piece of jewelry. It's a prop. Get a life. Get a life. You know what my identity is? Me, myself, and I. That's right. If I had a dog, the dog would be extra. Like I've said before, dogs shouldn't be kept in a little pouch that you walk around with or on a chain. You know, I like dogs that are out in the country and can run amok and act like a dog. Ugh. Yeah, dating women with dogs. Then you have to... What if you don't like the dogs? How about when they want the dog to sleep in the bed? No, you got a bunk mate. Oh, isn't he cute? Licking your feet? No. Actually not. Yeah. So I'm telling you something. I'll die on this mountain. I don't love all dogs. I just did a benefit for pit bulls. I don't know why I did it. Glad we raised money for the pit bulls. I'm sure some of the pit bulls deserve money. But when I hike, the dogs are running at me. I don't know. But again, it's like taboo. Like, don't say something bad about the dog. Is it possible, dog owners, that there are some bad dogs, just like there are some bad people? Like, why do we have to worship universally? Dogs are amazing. Every single one. Hey, the guy, switching here, that guy who lived in the Charles de Gaulle airport in Paris for 18 years, died. Remember Tom Hanks did a movie about him? Died. Guy lived on a red bench at the airport. I don't know why people are allowed to live at the airport. And if that's the case, why aren't all the homeless just camping out in Terminal 2? I don't know how you would live in an airport anyway with all the announcements. I'd go crazy. Smith, flight to Boston is boarding, paging Smith, party of two, final boarding. Like, I lived in a terminal, I go, where are the Smiths? Let's get them on the plane. What? Like, I go, how? I'm always fascinated. Like, somehow, Like, why are we caught? If you can't find your gate, you deserve to miss the flight. Like, they're calling you because you checked in. So somehow you got from your house to the airport, maybe you even parked. Then you got to the terminal. Then you found the check-in desk. You checked in. You checked your bags. Then you had to go, presumably, through secure. Now you can't find the gate on time. So we all have to be interrupted now. Everybody's got to be. Everybody is sitting there, you know, like the airport doesn't need any more announcements. Any more announcements. There's a million announcements for a million things. Sometimes they welcome you. Hi, welcome to Atlanta Hartsfield Airport. Atlanta is of the South. Then they have Amber Alerts. Anyway, so that guy died. That guy died. He, what was his story? I have notes on him somewhere. Oh, yeah. He somehow was caught up. Somehow he left. He was Iranian. He left Iran. And then he got stuck in, like, customs. So he was in between customs. Like, he couldn't leave the airport because he didn't have the paperwork to get out and be in Paris. And he didn't have the paperwork to get back to Iran. And so he made no attempt for 18 years, even though if you got to watch it on YouTube. There's a great 30-minute, like, short film about his life and how he would shave and eat. He ate at McDonald's every single day and he made no attempt to get out. In fact, he disowned his name and he decided to start calling himself Sir Alfred. He made up this completely different identity. Clearly the guy was off his, you know, a little bit off. I don't know if you can say that. Off his rocker. I have a whole new joke about off the rocker, but this guy wasn't with it because his family, it turns out, came to visit and tried to get him out. He didn't want to get out. They actually found his visa at some point and he denied that it was him. So there's probably some mental illness there, right? 4-5. Here's the thing. And this is how I know he didn't want to get out. Oh, they show him early on smoking. I thought, what did he do once you couldn't smoke in the airport anymore? He had a pipe. He was very comfortable there. He had a booth. He had all his newspapers, got free food from McDonald's, smoked his pipe, and then he became sort of a sensation, a phenomenon, and people would bring him things, gifts, offerings. I'd like that. Like people to bring me stuff, give me stuff. Like people to just Venmo me at Ornie Adams. I see people do that on their videos. They put their Venmo. Are strangers just Venmoing artists, creators? So the guy was from Iran. His real name was, I hope I say this correctly, Mehran Karimi Nasseri. Okay? He was seeking asylum, and he camped out in the airport voluntarily. And a doctor said about him, his father was a doctor. He came from a wealthy family. And a doctor who assessed him said he was lucid and functional, but also pathological. And he said, Sir Alfred was a persona that he created, a fantasy reality, and he was reluctant to escape because his reality that he created, Sir Alfred, was so beguiling. It was so, it got him attention, meaning if he left the airport, he wouldn't be the guy in the airport. And people were doing stories about him. They were interviewing him. They were coming in and playing chess with him. So he would just be ordinary. So he clung on to this. Family and friends went to visit, and he treated them like complete strangers. You know, and then I looked into it, and there were other people that have been living in airports. There's a guy in Beijing that his family kicked him out because he wouldn't quit smoking. He's been living in Terminal 2 for years. Years. Rather than quit smoking and live with his family. What does that say about his family? All right, then remember Edward Snowden lived in Moscow airport for a month. So this is not as unusual as you would think. Let's talk about New Orleans and then get out of here. Episode 65, full of focus. My name is Ornie Adams. I'm your host of What's Wrong with Ornie Adams. If you want to keep in touch with me, the email is whatswrong@orniadams.com. You can go to teamwhatswrong.com for all the links for everything. This is up on the video. The new video is up on Patreon. Older videos on YouTube, the audio is on, what do you want, Google? What do you want, Spotify? What do you want, Apple iTunes? What do you want? It's everywhere. Listen to it. Share it. Rate it. Write reviews on Apple Podcasts. Help me out and watch my special More Than Loud. More Than Loud, please. Please. I was in New Orleans for my birthday, hanging out, some friends. First thing I noticed is, I noticed that, I think it's mostly women, I'm going to cut this down gender line, that scream when they run into each other. So if you're in the French Quarter in New Orleans, like you'll be sitting there and all of a sudden you're, ah, oh my God, ah! And these women, as it turned out, knew they were both in the French Quarter in New Orleans and knew they were going to run into each other, but put on this show of screaming, like, oh my God, ah! Like they were so fake excited to see each other. This isn't like one of them has been lost in the woods for 30 days and just emerged and you can't believe that you're seeing them and they're alive. This isn't like, oh my God, I'm in Switzerland. And I just ran into somebody that I didn't know was going to be in Switzerland. This is like they knew they were going to run into each other. I saw it happen. I stayed at the Ritz-Carlton, and they had a really cool jazz bar, and it was quiet, and the jazz band was playing. And these two groups of women that, as it turns out, were part of a bridal party started screaming like they couldn't believe that they were saw each other at the bar at the hotel that they were staying at for the wedding. Like it'd almost be impossible that they didn't see each other. And these people couldn't stop screaming. And I'm looking at the jazz musicians that are like, what are you doing? We're trying to play jazz. And you're screaming like lowlifes. So that's the first observation I had in New Orleans. The other thing is, it is such a great city. Let me rattle off some of the things I did. Okay. I went to Fritzl's Jazz Club. I went to Lafitte's and had a purple drink, one of the oldest bars in the country. I went to Preservation Hall and listened to some jazz. I went to Café Dumond, and I had those old donuts with all the sugar on it, whatever those things are called. I looked at all the balconies. I studied the architecture, the dormer windows, and I really enjoyed New Orleans during the day. What does that mean, Orny Adams? Well, at night, feels like there's a lot of crime, a lot of drunkenness. Feels like one of those places where you're walking down the middle of the street, minding your own business, and somebody's just going to come up and punch you. That's what it felt like to me. So, on the last day, I was the only one there. I spent a night by myself. I'm at the Ritz-Carlton. It's on Canal Street, and it's about a block away from Bourbon Street, which is the heart of the French Quarter in New Orleans. I went to listen to a lot of jazz and New Orleans jazz and some amazing musicians. Really amazing. The one thing I noticed about every single club, and these look like hole in the walls right on Bourbon Street. But the one thing they all had in common, they all had pristine sound. The sound was impeccable. I thought, I wish the venues I played at, the comedy clubs, you know, had that. Like, I played some of the comedy clubs here in Los Angeles, and you can't even hear yourself. There aren't, like, speakers on the stage, which are called monitors, so you can't self-regulate. And then the speakers that you hear, even if you're in the room, it's like, oh, sounds like you're talking through a mask. Oh. Like, I just went to the pharmacy before I get back to New Orleans. I was at the pharmacy because I had to get some stuff for my knee, and I should tell that story. I'm not going to do it on this podcast, but the insurance company covering my knee injury for Paramount tried to mess with me. And guess what? Guess who won? I did. I fought him and I won. Let me tell you something. You don't try and push around Orny Adams. This guy for the insurance company, I won't say his name. I was going to say his name. This, because it might end up in court. This guy thought he could be dismissive and rude to me and not honor the claim and just reject something because the format was wrong. This guy thought he could shove me under the rug like he does other people. And guess what I did? I fought him in a really smart way. And I elevated it so high up the chain, I kneecapped this piece of crap. But I had to put my time into that. I thought, this guy's an idiot. Watch 10 minutes of my stand-up comedy. You're going to understand, I don't mess around. I enjoy going after people that are on the wrong side of justice, that are bullies. The guy was a bully. I shut him down. I want to tell that story, but it's going to get me all fired up again. I'll probably say something wrong that will get me in trouble. I'm going to wait till I get the final check. But don't, listen, we all have bad lives. We all have bad moments. We all aren't happy much sometimes. Don't take it out on other people. This guy was a jerk to me for no reason. And I fought him. So I had to pick up some medication for my knee because when I fly, it hurts. Like it gets swollen, inflamed. So I got some anti-inflammatory stuff. I went to the pharmacy. Can't even understand the pharmacist because they're all wearing masks and they're behind the plexiglass. So they're like, date of birth is, and they go, picking up medication.
Okay. We need a doctor.
What do you need?
A doctor.
My what?
A doctor.
My insurance card? This is Workman's Comp.
Don't make my phone
Okay, I'll give you my insurance card. That's what a lot of the comedy clubs here in Los Angeles, that's what it sounds like. The speakers are so blown out because for whatever reason, and they're old. Like, spend $100K. You do this every night. Get perfect sound. You have perfect sound. When I play theaters, man, I'm self-modulating. I sound good. I sound relaxed. I'm not rushed. You know, last night, my throat hurts. Because I'm yelling to hear myself. So that's the first thing I noticed. But the crime was unbelievable. Like, I was nervous. And I didn't realize how bad it was until... And here's something you need to know about Orny Adams, me. Every city I run into, I just randomly run into interesting people that just sort of... All of a sudden, they're part of my life. This is why I want to do What's Wrong with Orny Adams, because I have these conversations with people. Now, most of the time, these people wouldn't talk on the record. In fact, I had a conversation with somebody that grew up in South Central Los Angeles in an Uber, and I said, why don't you come on my podcast and tell this story? And he said, it'd get me killed. So these guys I met in New Orleans, it feels like they were part of what I would call the Cajun Mafia. They seem connected. They seem to know, they seem to know things too much. They just had that vibe. That vibe loves me. They love every city I go into. These people find me and then they protect me. So now these two guys, I was walking by and they were sitting outside and I said, I looked down and said, hi. I said, is this place any good? They said, yeah. I said, do you live here? They said, yeah. They said, best burger in town. I said, maybe I'll get a table. I went to see jazz at Fritzl's the other night. Is there another place I can see jazz tonight? And they said, have you been to Preservation Hall? I said, no, you got to go there. It's the oldest, it's greatest, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he said, why don't you sit down and join us? These guys bought me a hamburger. Then they basically kidnapped me and I couldn't get away from them. And these guys, I was like, I don't drink during the day. It was like 1 o'clock. They took me to Lafitte's, got me this purple drink, which is, I think it was vodka with ice and purple food coloring. And we just walked around. I said, I want to go to the Frenchman's Quarter. And we ended up in somebody's house. Like, it's so surreal. Like, I ended up in some house in the French Quarter. Like, why are these people inviting me into their house? They don't know me. And we ended up on the top floor, which looked like a sex dungeon. It was very goth and dark. And then I opened a closet and there were like whips and masks and shit. Like, I'm going to get myself killed is what I'm thinking. I thought the Cajun Mafia is kinky. These guys are cool. They kept buying me drink. We got to go to another bar. I'd have to like fake not drink it. You know what I mean? Like, but they were getting tanked. They got so tanked. I said, now it's like 4:30. I said, I got to get away from these guys. The drink, you know, I want to, so I said, I got to get back to the hotel. I have a business meeting, which I didn't, but I just said that, you know, I got a business meeting. So they said, we're going to walk you back because it's not safe. I go, what do you mean it's not safe? They said, up until 6 p.m., the French Quarter, anywhere you go is safe. After 6, do not go off of Bourbon Street. Well, the last 3 nights, that's all I've done is go off Bourbon Street. I've walked over to Cafe Du Monde area and the river and just walked in circles. I felt very comfortable. I said, no. They go, see that guy over there on the bike? That guy's trouble. He'll mug you. You know, I'm like, what? That guy over there is trouble. Then they point at somebody else and go, that guy is in trouble. And these guys, I suspect, were carrying guns. Not only, I'm talking about the guys who were taking me around. I said, how many, they had guns, but then I said, how many people around us right now have guns? They said, a lot of people. I said, I got to get home. They said, well, it's not even safe. They said, if you walk up Bourbon to Canal and go right to your hotel, that's the worst block. Canal and Bourbon is the most dangerous block in this whole area. I go, no, it is. I've been doing it every night. Fine. They go, you got lucky. They go, you have to go into the back entrance of the Four Seasons. So now I've got to sneak in the back entrance like I'm a Kennedy giving a speech. You know, that's how you always get assassinated. The back entrance through the kitchen. I said, we'll walk you there. I said, okay. All right. Well, we started walking there. And next thing you know, we're walking. There's the Preservation Hall with the jazz club they wanted me to go to. And the line is, it's out the door. I mean, it's down the street. It's a small venue, probably seats 75 to 100 people. Completely sold out. We had looked online because I wanted to really see this. And this guy walks up. He's Italian. Like I said, I call it the Cajun Mafia, whatever. You know, I'm not giving names. And he walked up and he said, we want ticket. He wants a ticket. I go, so we're sold out. He goes, $100. Anyway, I watched it. I stood back a little bit. He ended up bribing them and getting me into this sold out show. And so it was a 45-minute show. And I watched the jazz. I thought the jazz was great. I got to be honest with you. The band I saw at Fritzl's Jazz Club blew me away. And that place is just so cute. But I'm glad that I got to see the Preservation Hall and have that New Orleans experience. New Orleans. Got to have gumbo and New Orleans. Everything. I mean, crawfish. I don't need fish. You know, there are some restaurants in New Orleans, only fish. There's nothing else but crawfish and shrimp jumbo and, you know, that stuff. So anyway, they said to me, they said, listen, when you get done, so now the show was at 6, at 6:45. They said, I go, I got to get back to the hotel for my meeting. So but I went next door to this place, O'Brien's, that was a piano bar. And I see the two guys who are now out of their minds drunk. And I went up and said hi. They were so drunk, they didn't recognize me. They even recognize me. And one of the guys texted me the next day because I gave him my number. And I said, do you remember seeing me late? He said, no. I said, you guys didn't drive home, did you? They said, no, we took an Uber. But quite an experience. But they said this. They said, when you're in New Orleans, which I thought was interesting, because I travel the world and I find myself to be street savvy. Like, I'm not like Bobby Lee. Bobby Lee got mugged in South Africa because he went across the street. We had when we were on that tour, we had two armed security guards with us. They said, don't leave the hotel without us. Bobby snuck across the street. I think he was getting cigarettes, probably his pornography. He got mugged. I knew not to go across the street. So I feel like I have a good sense of where to be and not be when I'm in a city and how to. Because I remember, like, when I was started out in New York City, or not started out, but when I was a younger comic, I would take the subway home at like 3 a.m. and there'd be, you know, gangs on there. And you just sort of like, you know, you didn't ignore them, you sort of look at them and gave them their respect, and that was it. So when I was in New Orleans, I would, like, if somebody came up to me, like a lot of people come up to you, hey man, can I ask you a question? And I go, yes, I am famous. That's how I shut it down. Yes, I am famous, and keep walking. Well, they said, if somebody comes up to you, or most of the time I ignored it, like sometimes come up and, you know, hey, weed, come. This is another thing. They were dealing weed on the street. I know weed's sort of legal there, or it is legal. Maybe, I don't know if it's medicinal or for social reasons, but they would sit, someone would be on the street with a scale weighing weed. And then people would come up to you, cocaine? I never heard people come up and say cocaine. So I said, if these guys come up to you, don't ignore them, which is what I do a lot of the times. They say, you say, I'm local. That's it. You say, no thanks, I'm local. If you ignore them, they might punch you. And they said they work in gangs. It looks like there's one, but many people around them are observing what's going on. So there's a scam. And I'll leave you on this. There's a it's called a sneaker scam in New Orleans. And so a guy or a woman will come up to you. I'll say a guy. It's a guy. A guy comes up to you. And he says, I bet I can tell you. I bet you $10 I can tell you where you got your shoes. And you think, no, you can't. I got these at the Santa Monica Pier in Los Angeles. He's not going to know that. So yeah, I'll tell, okay, $10. And so he'll say, on your feet. You got your shoes on your feet. And that's a scam. And then you have to pay him. And if you don't pay him, I read this thing. It says, if you don't pay him, where is it? The problem is, if you play, you have to pay. If you deny the first bet, you may get, I bet I can tell you where you got your shoes and on what street you got them on. Again, the answer would be the obvious one. You got your shoes on your feet in the current street that you're on. Your best bet is to simply say no thanks and keep walking. If you engage, you're likely going to have someone in your face demanding payment. And frankly, you'll be lucky if it's just one person demanding payment. That's from a travel site for New Orleans. For New Orleans, okay? So the final night, I'm walking back to my hotel, and a guy comes up to me, and he says, bet you $10 I can guess where you got your shoes. And I said, I'm local. And he yelled after me, carry on, local. Carry on, local. Episode 65. I'm a local. I'm a local. Everywhere I go, I'm going to say I'm a local. Put them together and what do you got? What an episode. Episode 65. Thanks for tuning in. My name's Ronnie Adams. Thank you, Ernesto Hurtado, for mastering the audio. This will be up on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, video on Patreon, older video on YouTube. Watch More Than Loud. Please like, subscribe, share this stuff. Share it. I thank you, my fans. I'm going to call you my fans. The people commenting, you guys are remarkable. I can't thank you enough. I really can't. Thank you for being so super, super cool. So remember, no more babies in first class. You don't have to love all babies. You don't have to love all dogs. And if you wrote me a love letter in high school, I'm coming for you. I'm coming for you. Watch my appearance on Whitney Cummings' podcast, where I talk about high school and this kid Frank. It was a 2.5-hour podcast, and it was absolutely a pleasure. And I look forward to doing more podcasts in the future, of course. Tour dates will be up on OrnieAdams.com. And I just want to say this. You will never see me at the gym working out as a couple. Thank you. Have a wonderful week.